I'm Tom Jackson, and on the line now I have Brian Conley. Brian is a filmmaker and independent journalist who has done extensive work with IndieMedia.org, especially with Boston and Indie Media. Brian recently returned from Iraq and Jordan. His blog is called Alive in Baghdad, and that's aliveinbaghdad.org, which was, quote, formed with the intent of making the world, and particularly the United States, aware of the Iraqi experience. Brian, thanks a lot for being with us today.
Well, thank you.
I'm wondering, first of all, when you were in Iraq and for how long, and what made you decide to go there?
Well, I left for Amman the last day of September, September 30th, and then I didn't make it to Iraq until October 20th or 21st, I believe, due to the sort of difficult process of obtaining a visa in Jordan for Iraq. When I finally got to Iraq, I was there about 2 weeks, 18 days, something like that, just because of, you know, money constraints and time constraints, since it took so much more to get there than I had expected. You know, what made me go to Iraq is, in a lot of ways, we don't know anything about the situation there, or we know very little, you know, for one thing. And for another thing, I have the ability to go. You know, I'm young, I have a rudimentary grasp of Arabic, I don't have a family, you know, these sorts of things. And so that sort of, you know, kind of gave me the permitted me to be able to go without the same concerns that many other people have had.
It'd be great to hear some sort of, you know, firsthand eyewitness people stories. I mean, what is life like for Iraqis on the street level today?
Well, you know, it's there's still a wide disparity, just like everywhere, between, you know, the wealthy and sort of the upper middle class of Baghdad, and, you know, in places like Mansour and Yarmouk, you know, certain neighborhoods in Baghdad. And then, you know, other folks who are just sort of struggling, scraping by, and were scraping by before and are now scraping by during the occupation. And in a lot of ways, it's sort of like the one big change is that now, you know, the wealthy and the not wealthy are closer to each other in terms of nobody has security, you know. No amount of armored trucks or bodyguards has been shown to really ensure people's security in Iraq today. I mean, things, you know, then there's general things like, you know, Iraq, people in Iraq have an average of, I think, 13 hours of electricity right now. Something like, I think, 70% of Iraqis lack access to clean water. And then even, you know, almost even more brazen, you can look at the fact that Iraq's one of the number one, well, the highest oil-producing areas in the world, or has the largest oil reserves, the second, third, something like that. And yet, Iraqis are standing in mile-long gas lines on average, you know, just to get to fill up their tank. So all these things sort of contribute to a very unfortunate set of circumstances in Iraq right now, and also contribute to people's frustration and anger with the U.S. occupation.
Well, as far as the occupation goes, tell us what you're seeing in terms of the effects that ongoing occupation is having on day-to-day life for most Iraqis.
Well, you know, I mean, the sort of like tanks and other, you know, American convoys, because of the now mandatory, you know, remaining 100 to 200 yards back from these convoys, it causes massive slowdowns because, you know, obviously even a small car goes much faster than an American tank. And so these tanks are just sort of trundling along often on major highways, and sometimes even in, you know, in downtown Baghdad, which is causing massive traffic delays, you know, just for one element, you know. And of course, because Humvees and tanks and other vehicles are still present inside Baghdad on the regular streets, there's, you know, frequent attacks against them, but because they're attacks directed largely at American troops, many Iraqis consider to be legitimate, but also these attacks are often causing collateral damage in the form of Iraqi civilians.
Well, talk to us some about what you, as an independent journalist, have been seeing in Iraq when you were there, as compared to the sort of things that the mainstream media in the U.S. has been showing or not showing, actually.
Well, an interesting thing is Anderson Cooper from, you know, CNN, sort of golden boy lately, just went to Iraq. And in the advertisement for his trip, he sort of says, we know we've heard a lot of negative things coming out of Iraq about the, you know, lack of electricity and the problems with the clean water and gas shortages, but we're gonna show some of the more positive, reconstruction of Iraq, which is so ironic and kind of Orwellian. And that, you know, I don't know about you, but I've never seen anybody on CNN or Fox News or any of these channels talking about the day-to-day problems in Iraq. I only see them talking about terrorism, how many soldiers were killed this day, how many Iraqis killed by a suicide bomber today, this sort of thing. And for me, like, just living, I lived in a neighborhood in Baghdad, in an apartment with my fixer, and we dealt with the day-to-day electrical, power outages, electricity shortages, water being cut off, all these things that we're not seeing in the mainstream media, and I don't think we'll ever see them because these aren't things that the media is having to deal with. Certainly Juan Cole, the blogger from the University of Michigan, is an expert on Middle Eastern affairs. He often refers to the fact that Western journalists are almost entirely dealing with sort of middle class, more educated, more intellectual people in Iraq, as opposed, and often people who weren't in Iraq until recently, rather than dealing with people who've lived all their lives in Iraq, who deal with the day-to-day problems, who are like the average people.
What do you think about some of the more recent news and some of the theories about immediate withdrawal from Iraq, say, with the idea that it'll break into full-scale civil war? And also, what do you think the effects of the recent elections, if anything, will come from that?
Well, an interesting... So there was a recent poll I was just reading today where the poll found that two-thirds of Iraqis thought that the U.S. should leave and oppose the U.S.'s presence in Iraq. But what they also found was that only one-fourth of Iraqis supported an immediate withdrawal. Now, this sort of interesting dichotomy is really typical of life in Iraq. It's typical of the reasons that people could say in one breath, I know Alawi, Iyad Alawi worked for the CIA and was a Ba'athist and killed a lot of people, and then the next breath can say, but I'm going to vote for him anyway because he's going to provide security to Iraq. And these sort of dichotomies, it happens again and again and again. But as far as the civil war, everyone I spoke to in Iraq, just about everyone at least, said that look, there might be a civil war, but the problem is that it's being dealt with as something that has been a long simmering thing, that's just been waiting for the chance to bubble to the surface. And basically every Iraqi I spoke to said that was just preposterous, because I would meet someone and they would say, oh, I'm a Sunni and my wife, she's a Shia, or I'm a Sunni and my mother's a Shia and my grandfather's a Kurd, And it's really clear that Iraq is a very ethnically diverse, advanced society, or, it certainly was before the Gulf War, the first Gulf War, in the early 90s. And now, because of, almost two decades, well, going on 15 years or so, of, backward trends, situation is much, much different, I do think that if the U.S. was just to, up and leave, sort of like Saigon, that it would mean a lot of problems, It's certainly not clear, though, whether it would mean civil war immediately or whether it would mean all of the sort of Western-backed leaders would leave immediately. It's unclear. There's certainly Iraqis who think that people like Iyad Alawi, Chalabi, Jafri, all these folks, once the Americans leave, are just going to leave also. And so those people, they also believe that the Americans will never leave because of this problem. I also think that, there probably wouldn't be a civil war if it wasn't for the fact that if the U.S. leaves, they're still going to be supporting the people who are in power right now, the Shiites and the Kurds, because we're still going to be buying their oil, and we're still going to be sending our companies there to drill the oil and trying to sell it to the highest bidder. And, whatever money, you're not going to be able to control the money for the oil, where it goes, so obviously we're going to buy oil from the Shiites. They're going to use that oil money to buy guns and oppress the Sunnis. It's pretty cut and dry. But I don't think that a civil war is a necessity. I don't think that it's definitely going to happen. And that's what people in Iraq are telling me.
How about your take on the elections? I mean, the word through U.S. mainstream media was that there was a tremendous turnout, and including sizable turnouts in Sunni areas this time. What's your take on that, and what effect it might have?
Well, there does appear to be, I mean, from my perspective, too, and people I'm hearing from, it does appear that there was quite a large turnout in the election. It remains to be seen, you know, how that's going to affect things, I think. It depends a lot on what the exact numbers are. It depends on whether or not fraud is alleged. And, I mean, in the initial return, it looks like, to no surprise, the United Iraqi Alliance, the sort of Shiite fundamentalist sect, is going to take the overwhelming portion of votes, which is, you know, no surprise to anybody. But what we don't know is how will the U.S., you know, how will they react to their victory? Will they reach out to Sunni parties? Will they reach out to Sunni Islamist parties, or to more secular, more advanced, you know, modern, westernized Sunni groups? Will they just try to form a coalition with Alawi again? It's unclear. You know, it's anybody's guess, really. And so I think that's a big deal. Certainly, the Sunnis have been working really hard to, you know, behind the scenes to provide a sort of political arm. You know, and certainly while I was in Iraq, many people told me, you know, look, there's obviously a military, you know, armed resistance, but there are also a lot of people working behind the scenes and communicating with different groups in the government, outside the government, mainly nationalists, you know, not people who came with the U.S. or Britain, but communicating behind the scenes to provide a political opposition, the possibility that the U.S. might leave immediately. What are we going to do, and how are we going to provide some sort of governing body, and how are the Sunni areas going to be a part of that?
Well, talk to us a little bit about some of the real strongest and perhaps what you might think would be lasting impressions that you've come away with from your time in Iraq. Is there are there particular Iraqis that made a great impression on you, or any sort of circumstances that come to mind?
Yeah, well, I met a lot of Iraqis, but some of the people that, you know, I feel like were doing, you know, left the largest impression were people, Iraqi journalists, you know, folks who were going and doing the work that the Western media is afraid to do, and basically incapable of doing at this point. I mean, I think that with a lot of practice and cultural understanding and historical learning and these sorts of things, that the Western media could do a much better job of covering Iraq. But as of right now, they can't. But something no one's talking about is, while yes, there have been 250, you know, Westerners kidnapped, and about 50 of them have been killed, you know, by various kidnappers and various people, you know, not necessarily journalists who've been killed, some of them, many of them contractors. In terms of Iraqi journalists, there have been 37 Iraqi journalists killed by the U.S. occupation authority alone. We're not counting, you know, journalists who've been killed by criminals, journalists who've been killed by resistance fighters or insurgents. We're not counting about journalists who've been kidnapped. We're just talking about Iraqi journalists who've been killed by the United States and possibly by the coalition as a whole. I'm not clear on that. And that's huge, you know, and nobody's talking about that. And nobody's saying, well, maybe we should do something to help, you know, provide for the protection of Iraqi journalists. And yet these people are still going out and still telling their stories and still doing the work that the Western, you know, Western media is incapable of doing. And it takes a huge amount of bravery and a huge amount of strength and a huge amount of just dedication to your country, you know.
Well, just going back for a second to kidnappings, of course, the kidnapping of the four Christian Peacemaker team's members has been covered somewhat, perhaps more than most of the ones that have happened in terms of the U.S. media coverage. And yet the first deadline was December 8th, and that was changed to December 10th, and since then there hasn't been any word about them kidnapped by an organization previously unheard of, and one that apparently isn't communicating at all, or not much. Do you have any sense of what's going on there, or any ideas in terms of, you know, personal theory or anything like that?
Well, I mean, some of my contacts in the area have theorized that actually the Swords of Righteousness Brigade is a like a branch or a unit or a brigade or a battalion or, you know, whatever military lingo you want to use, of a much larger Iraqi resistance group, which is the Army of the People and the Group of the People of Sunnah, or something like that. It's a very sort of difficult translation. But, I mean, if that's true, it sort of shows that it's not very good news, because this group is very militant. Sort of person who's suggested this to me also says that they're, like, very similar to Al-Qaeda in terms of their dealings with Westerners and people of this nature. But, you know, I think the part of the media hype is just that it is a number of things. I mean, on the one hand, it's really good work being done by Christian Peacemaker Team to get out the story. On another hand, it was sort of a shocking thing. You know, the U.S. Media, the Western media, talked a lot about the wave of kidnappings in 2004, but then because it didn't happen for a while, sort of not clear, you know. And then now it's like a big deal. And because these people, they are existing, you know, outside the green zone, outside the realm of sort of secure areas, because they're Westerners, because they're Christians, you know, because they're sort of dedicated to nonviolence, it's kind of like, oh, this is very, you know, interesting. And, you know, and it's sort of hard for the media to wrap their brain around it. And so then it was very easy, I think, for them to become a very big story.
In the last few minutes that we have, I'd like to hear about your plans for the immediate future. I understand that you're producing a film, want to return to Iraq if possible, and that right now you're really trying to get the word out in terms of you know, what you saw there.
Yeah, I'm doing all that I can to get a film together. I'm trying to set up screenings and talks. So anybody who's, you know, listening to this, if they want me to come to their community and talk about the situation in Iraq, show videos of people, of what people in Iraq are saying, what it looks like in Baghdad, you know, they can go to the website aliveinbaghdad.org and look around, or they can contact me at aliveinbaghdad@gmail.com. Also, as you said, I'm trying to go back to Iraq. It takes a lot of money, so I'm, you know, asking people for donations. I'm going to be doing speaking events to raise money. If people are willing to donate, they should know that even $5 or $10 goes a long way. There's a donate section on the website, aliveinbaghdad.org. And, you know, I'm hoping to go back to Iraq by February, you know, but we'll see if that comes together.
And speaking of the screenings and talks that you're hoping to do, I just want to let people know that we do have you scheduled for January 23rd, which is a Monday, 7 p.m. in Portsmouth. We are looking for the right venue to have that at. It's a fairly recent scheduling, but I did want to let people know that you'll be coming to Portsmouth to show some of your video and talk about Iraq. Details to be announced in terms of the venue, and people can stay tuned to WSCA for that, as well as checking other local independent media poster kiosks and so on. We will get the word out about where that will be taking place. Brian, thanks a lot for your time, and best of luck to you, and we look forward to seeing you on the 23rd of January.
Great. Thank you, Tom. I'll see you then.
Okay. Take care.